At this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify requirements for chairing a meeting at Central Orlando Group. Saturday night speaker meetings are 1 year of continuous sobriety and attendance at a group conscience meeting. My name is Megan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Megan.
I didn't want to stop drinking, but I came in here when drinking stopped being fun. I started to get all the consequences. DUIs. I had no friends. I was miserable. I was depressed. I was angry, and I wanted to drink like normal people, but I just couldn't, and I tried. I tried for years to try to just, you know, have that one drink and maintain, but then I'd be miserable trying to maintain. So I came in here. I worked the steps. I found a God of my understanding, and it filled the void I had inside that made me drink all the drinks I drank. And today, no matter what's going on the outside, I'm good on the inside. And, you know, life's amazing, and it just takes doing the work and finding a God of your understanding and staying sober. And you can have a life worth living. At least I know I can. So thanks.
You're
welcome. The group asked me to remind you to please make sure your phones are off and to refrain from moving around or talking while the speaker is sharing. So to introduce the speaker tonight, I met her about a year ago or so, and she is an amazing person, amazing mom, amazing daughter, sister. I mean, she welcomed me into her family with open arms and, you know, not really knowing me. She doesn't, you know, she kind of has to like me because I'm dating her brother, but, you know. but she's been amazing, and I'm really excited to hear her story. So without further ado, here's Erin F.
Hi, my name's Erin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Erin.
Wow, there's a lot of you. Just for the record, I do love Megan, and not because she's dating my brother, although that is a nice bonus. I've been sober since the end of January in 2006. My story is not very different from most people's. You know, I'm just a typical alcoholic. I think that I was probably born with all of the defects of character that most of us have. And, you know, as I went through life, I just didn't develop good coping skills. The only coping skill I ever developed was drinking and other things. And where to start? You know, I was a liar. I lied about everything. I never felt good enough. I always felt less than, different, but in a negative way different. Very good at comparing myself to other people. And so, to be honest, what I think I did is I surrounded myself with people that I felt better than, to give my self-esteem that boost I kind of needed. And unfortunately, the people I surrounded myself with didn't make good decisions, and neither did I. You know, and my decisions continue to get worse. I lived in Orlando for most of my life as a child, and so I got exposed to a lot of things early. I'm sure most of you guys can relate to that. And, you know, I started drinking and partying when I was a child, but I thought I was grown up, you know, and I met wonderful, like, there's been so many Mr. Wonderfuls, I can't even tell you how great all those experiences have been. And, you know, I've just kind of let people lead me around my whole life. And, you know, I always kind of felt like I missed the day in school where you got the little book and it told you how to be comfortable in social situations, the right things to say and do, how to be a lady, you know, to be smart, all of those things, you know. And I looked around at people around me, and I thought I was just missing something, you know. I just didn't get it. And but when I drank, I got it, you know. And my kind of my family life, you know, I have a very loving family. I had parents who divorced when I was young. That really did affect me. It's nothing terrible. It wasn't traumatic. I mean, I guess it was for me because I was so young. And I do remember a lot of the things that happened. But I kind of used that as, you know, my family's not like everybody else's family. And, you know, my dad's not here. And, you know, I definitely took advantage of the fact that my mom was a single mother, you know, and she just, she did the best she could. She couldn't be there all the time. And boy, did I love it when she wasn't home, you know. Mm-hmm. And it starts as young as I can remember. We used to live over here off Bumby on Huntington Street. And we would come home after school. My mom would let us ride our bikes home after school. And we got to stay home by ourselves, you know. And the rule was, don't cross, was it 50 or one of the big roads, because there was a gas station on the other side. And I mean, I just remember, just as soon as she told me that, I just started plotting about and planning this adventure, you know, and going through with it and continuing to go through with it even after I got caught. It was never maybe I shouldn't do this, or maybe there's safety issues. Always kind of like more of a challenge, like how can I do this next time and not get caught. And that's kind of the theme of my life, you know. There were no breaks. There were no breaks. There were no walls. There was no stop sign. It was just, how do I get around it next time and not get caught? How do I make it worth it if I do get caught? You know, and so that continued on. And that kind of mindset went on for a long time. And you know, I got really out of hand here, and I think that at some point my mother realized that, and her solution to that was a geographical cure. She got us out of Orlando. She moved us in the middle of nowhere, really in the middle of nowhere. And of course that didn't fix anything. You know, I brought me with me, and while my choices got limited as far as condiments go, you know, alcohol was everywhere. And my family up there, it was really conducive to drinking. Even when you were a child, you know, you might get a little slap on the wrist, but they knew you were down in the basement drinking the homebrew. They didn't lock the basement door, you know, or not leave you there with it. And so, you know, I can remember, oh, it's Super Bowl Sunday. Yes, you can have a drink. It's a special occasion. You know, and I had convinced my mother at 14 or 15 that she should just go ahead and start buying me cigarettes, because I was going to get them anyways. And just, you know, a lot of just crazy stuff went on. And so she moves us up there, and it was my first, it was culture shock. I mean, they drove tractors down the road. I remember seeing that and thinking, are you even allowed to do that? And that was in town, and we didn't live in town. And so, you know, I know what I said about doing. Finding the five or six kids who were bad in town, and I set about further corrupting them. You know, because I was only 15 and I couldn't drive out of there yet. And so I made older friends so I could get out of there. There were a couple Mr. Wonderfuls, and, you know, and that stuff carried on. And I, you know, my bad choices didn't stop. The one thing I did maintain was my grades. That was kind of, as long as my grades got kept up, a lot of other stuff, you know, was let go. And I did that until about my senior year in high school. And that's, you know, it wasn't my grades, it was my absences. And I made a series of bad, really bad decisions. And I ended up pregnant about a week before I graduated high school. And that was my first real crisis, where I couldn't think my way around my parents or out of the situation. I just couldn't. And it was the first time I can ever remember having to really break down and ask for help. And it was hard. And it was only because there was no way out. You know, I was 17 years old. And so I really struggled with that for a long time. I didn't keep the child. And, you know, there's just a lot of issues there, which I suffered from a long time. And, it fueled my alcoholism, because I was really trying to run from those decisions. And it was a real small town. And so everybody was talking about it. Everybody knew. And, you know, I did what all good alcoholics do. I ran. You know, my college was paid for in Florida. And so I got in my car and I drove down to Florida. So my next geographical cure. I never made it into school. I made it back to Ocala, and my dad helped me get a house. And, you know, I thought to myself, if I just work really hard and keep so busy that all I do is work until I can get myself into school, I'm going to be okay. And I won't know anybody, and I don't know anybody there, and it's going to be okay, you know. And maybe if I do that long enough, I can start making better decisions. And I don't even know if it was about better decisions. I just won't get in any more trouble. And so anyways, I got a job at the Holiday Inn. I was a banquet manager. Or working or assistant banquet manager, since we're being honest. And I worked that job, and I mean, you know, there was another Mr. Wonderful there, and he was old enough to drink, and, you know, before you knew it, we were working such late hours, and we worked so hard, and we should just go to the bar, and, you know, he introduced me to all those people. And so then it got to the point where even though I wasn't of age, they all knew me, and so I could go without him, which was good, since he didn't last very long. And you know, and I continued to drink, and I had consequences, but I kind of always escaped my consequences, you know. It never got really bad, and when things started to look a little tough, I would go somewhere else. I would just run. And you know, I remember leaving the bar one night, and I got pulled over. They watched me get my car and leave the bar. And it was great. I mean, there was like three cops, and then all of a sudden there was like six cops, and it turned into this whole huge thing, you know. And I started crying, and I told them who my dad was, and that if they took me to jail, just, you know, I'm not even calling anybody. I just keep me there. And they let me go. They did. They let me go. They let my friend get in the car, who's also drunk, but for some reason she passed the test, and I drove out of there. Yeah. That was a little scary. And anyway, so during this time period, I started doing stuff I shouldn't have been doing. Obviously, I lived beyond my means. I'm sure a lot of us tend to do that. And, you know, I started writing bad checks. They started bouncing. Things started, you know, adding up. And my dad was kind enough to let me know that they usually do warrant sweeps around the holidays, and since Christmas was coming, I might want to think about going somewhere else or putting together some bail money. So I ran to Orlando. I came back here. And I met a guy. There's always a guy. This one, though, I proceeded to live with for 3 years. You know, I never liked him, and I'm be perfectly... I didn't like him when I first met him, you know, but I needed a place to stay, and that's being 100% honest. And that's what he became. And, you know, I stayed there for 3 years. I had a child with him. And that was just a nightmare, you know. We were both alcoholics. And things got really out of hand. There was a lot of abuse. But I stayed because, you know, who wants to be a quitter? And, you know, I had all these perceived issues. You know, I keep coming back to this because I've made a lot of decisions in my life based on the fact of this ideal family. You know, in my mind, if I would have just had the house with the white picket fence and the two parents who had been married for 30 years and stayed together for another 30, and I had all that stability, then everything would have been fine. I mean, that was kind of my lie that I held on to. And it directly affected the decisions I've made in men and all kinds of things. And so I stayed with this guy because even though I didn't like him, and by that point I didn't need a place to stay anymore, you know, I didn't want to quit on this idea of this family. And so, you know, things finally got to the point where I couldn't take it anymore. And wouldn't you know, my 21st birthday came around, and I just, you know, I had been like cooped up in this relationship for almost 3 years. I really hadn't been able to do much. And so I was going to treat myself, and we were going to go out together, except I got off work early, and I worked right next to a bar. And so I went with my friends, and 3 days later, I made it home. And I had a, you know, my daughter was probably, she would have been 5 months old. So not good behavior for a mom. And so that kind of stuff continued to happen. And, you know, that ended in the police and restraining orders. And then almost immediately after I met Mr. Wonderful Number 2, he stayed around for 4 years. You know, I moved a few more times. I like to go to Pennsylvania and then move back. I did that a few times. And I took Mr. Wonderful Number 2 with me on some of those moves until I figured out that he was my problem. And I left him. And I landed in Leesburg. And, you know, I did the same thing there that I did here. Okay, I have this clean start. I'm going to go to school finally, and I'm going to work really hard. I'm not going to talk to the neighbors. I'm not going to make friends at school. I'm just going to, you know, I got this. And, you know, I'd find myself sitting in class looking at these people and figuring out, oh, I know what they're doing, you know, and my mind would just start playing with me. And, you know, before you knew it, I was talking to those people. I was talking to the neighbors. You know, I had all kinds of friends, all kinds of stuff going on, and I was right back where I landed, maybe worse. And, you know, at that time, my daughter was probably 3 or 4. You know, I just like to say this. I really love my daughter, but she did not keep me sober. I stepped over her for a drink and many other things. You know, I just wasn't capable of being a good mom. And so while she had what she needed, she was neglected. She was neglected emotionally, definitely. So I get to this place. I'm in Leesburg, and things are starting to fall apart. Mr. Wonderful Number 4, he goes away the same way with police and restraining orders, and that's how they always end. Up until this point. you know, and once he was gone, I was like, whew, freedom, you know. And I did the same thing I always did. And, you know, I went downhill really quickly. And, you know, this time there were no breaks. I just, you know, something inside me kind of snapped. And I just did not care. I really, like, it had ceased to be fun a long time before this. You know, I drank way past that point, and it just got to the point where I really think that I was just drinking to end it. I just wanted it to end. So I'm sitting in this house, and at this point, Mr. Wonderful Number 4 that left with the police, he's in jail. He's been there for like 6 months for assault. My daughter is at my father's house. DCF is looking for me. The police were looking for me to serve a subpoena. And I believe my mom had reported me missing at this point because nobody had heard from me for a while. And I really was contemplating suicide. I'm too much of a sissy to actually do it. But I was thinking about how I could do it. And, you know, I just remember asking God, and I, you know, it wasn't even about whether I believed in God or not, you know, at that point for me. I just did not want to feel the way I felt anymore. And so it was kind of like, just make it stop, however that needs to be. Give me the strength to end this one way or another. And I had a moment of clarity, the first one I had had in like 13 years. And, you know, for one split second, I saw my whole life. And I don't know what possessed me, but I picked up the phone and I called my dad. And I said, okay, I've realized the error of my ways, and I want to go to treatment. And he said, well, that's great. He said, call me when you get there. Click. And, yeah. And, you know, I had a choice, and my choice, it changed my life that day. You know, I could have walked right back in that house, but I didn't. I walked back to my house, which was a couple miles away. My mom was there, the missing person thing and all, and they drove me to treatment. I went to Lifestream down in Leesburg. Prior to this, I had never really been exposed to AA other than my father's recovering alcoholic husband for like 25 years. But I didn't hear any of that crap he was telling me growing up. I mean, just being honest, we used to have the talks all the way from Orlando to Ocala every other weekend, you know, and I never heard any of that stuff, even then. And I had also done a little stint in SARS, which is a treatment program in the detox, where I met my friend Jennifer, and over New Year's Eve. And I was proud of myself because I voluntarily stayed through New Year's Eve and then promptly went out and got drunk. But prior to that, no exposure, you know, and I went to live stream. And SARS is a little different than live stream. SARS is nice. The nurses there are nice. You get donuts in the morning. You know, it's kind of like an easygoing day. Live stream was a little bit of a wake-up call for me. I mean, it is a mental health institution. I was put in a room with people detoxing off of schizophrenia meds, like the no-slip grip socks, you know, and no razors, all that kind of good stuff was happening. And, you know, I had been offered a place in treatment. And I wouldn't even look at the rooms. I thought that my dad knows some of the people out there, and so I thought that there was this big conspiracy and they were violating my privacy, and so I wouldn't even go look at the rooms. And so I had to call these people and beg. And I ended up in SARS for 6 months, which was a good place for me. I really needed to be locked away long enough to hear the message, and it took me a little while. You know, I wish I could tell you what I heard in the first meeting. I don't know. I probably heard nothing. The committee in my head was probably just going nonstop, you know. And I just know that I felt relieved and I felt safe for the first time in a really long time. And as I sat there, you know, I started to hear, we have a solution. And, you know, if you don't want to feel that way anymore, you don't have to, and here's another option. And I didn't know I had any other options. And, you know, for me, I wasn't ready to get sober until I had exhausted all mine, because, like, remember what I said about it was never, there was no stop signs for me. It was how can I get around it. And so I had to exhaust all of that before I was willing to get sober. And so anyways, I did my stint there, and, you know, I managed to get my daughter back, and I have a wonderful life now. There is Mr. Wonderful number 3. He actually is wonderful. He's still here. He's not in the handcuffs anywhere. You know, and I kind of have adjusted my idea of what the house with the white picket fence is. It's not so much about the superficial stuff. It's about the family. And I have a great one all the way around. You know, I got a sponsor at 30 days. She's still my sponsor. And I did everything everyone told me to, because I did not want to feel the way that I felt. And as a result, not only did I get sober and stay sober, I got a lot of happiness and joy. You know, I have an identity today. I don't have to surround myself with people that make me that I can feel better than. I am really grateful to just be a part of, you know, and the irony is so funny, you know, when you land here. You know, I work the steps. It's a continuous process. It's never over. And, you know, the book work is, the book is great. In the beginning, and still now, I shouldn't say that. The book is great, period. You know, and I continue to work my steps, but really now it's about how can I apply this stuff in my life every day. It's easy to do it in AA for me because you guys are so understanding. You know, you guys are just like me, and I get to come in here and I still get that safe. It's like, I guess what other people get from church, I get that here. You know, but when I get to work, it's a lot harder to be nice to the cranky lady down the hallway who's always a jerk to me. And so I get lots of practice in the real world and support. I do a lot of, I try to do a lot of service work. You know, I did a lot of fellowshipping in the beginning. I still do, but I'm happy to say that I actually have a network of women around me that I'm very close with. you know, I actually have real friends. I never had that before. I like to think I did. They just wanted what I had, or I wanted what they had. It was kind of a symbiotic relationship. Now they're my friends, and they love me and support me just because. You know, as far as the service work, I'm a business student, and so I thought, oh, I'll do the AA business thing. And I did that, and I climbed my way up, and then I climbed my way back down. You know, I got a lot of joy out of that. I got to participate in starting a young people's group in Ocala, and that was great. I have a lot of fantastic friends, and we still have a lot of fun there. You know, I got to serve at the area and district level for a while, which was a neat experience. But my ego gets out of control, and I want to start fixing everything, so I figured out my place is probably a little smaller. I take meetings into the jail, which has actually been one of my most rewarding things that I've done service work-wise. I mean, I guess my message kind of always, as far as the program goes, is I still use the same tools I got the first 6 months I got sober. It really is simple. It's not always easy to do the right thing, but it is simple. And if I am, prayer is the best tool that I've been given. You know, if I don't know what I need to be doing, or I'm not sure what direction I need to go, you know, all I have to do is use the tools that I was given. You know, call my sponsor, read my material, whatever that is, the big book, and I like the 24-hour book and that kind of stuff. I try to meditate as much as possible, and I pray a lot, you know, and I get a lot of inspiration, and it's made me a better human being, period. Just a better human being. You know, back to the family situation. You know, I look at my family, and I'm very blessed. I have a lot of support there. You know, and it amazes me how skewed my perception of my life was when I was drinking. You know, when I was drinking, my family was out to get me. I always carried the cross, you know. It was all them, you know. I was the victim. If they could just understand all the stuff I'd been through, they're just picking on me, all of that stuff, you know. And my perception was skewed about everything, not just my family. My drinking, my daughter, you know, work. You know, I've actually had the same job for 5 years. It's amazing. I couldn't keep a job, period, you know. And when I first got sober, I remember saying, I've never been fired. You know, that's not true. As I've stayed sober, I've started to recall I have been fired several times with just cause, you know. Oh yeah, there was some theft, there was some lying. You know, and so the honesty comes in waves. It's okay if you don't get it all at first. And, you know, but today I get the opportunity to right those wrongs and to kind of, I'm not totally the person I want to be, but I'm getting there. I'm a lot better. I like where I'm at a lot better than when I started. I've definitely grown a lot. And, you know, I've really had the opportunity to set some things right. You know, back to the job that I was justly fired for when I was stealing. And I had blamed it on these other people, and their alcohol, they might have been stealing too, I don't know. Somebody was definitely stealing a lot. I don't think I stole that much. So we were probably all in it together, unknowingly. But, you know, it's funny how stuff works out and where you get chances to make amends. You know, my boss there, you know, I went out in a blaze of glory. You know, the big wig came down, accused me of stealing. I did the whole, you know, oh, how dare you accuse me, and I just quit. Bam, slammed down my badge, out I went. You know, several years later when I went back, that house that I was in Leesburg belonged to my grandmother, and I had made a complete wreck of it. And so my parents had come down, my mother had come down, and we were cleaning the house up. And obviously I thought it was, you know, I needed to participate in that and make some amends there. That was tough. A week of mom being really mad at you every time she looked at that house you were cleaning up. And, you know, we walk up and they've been telling me this whole ride, you know, they keep telling me about this lawn guy they have and all the great handyman stuff he's been doing around the house and blah, blah, blah. And we pull up and lo and behold, it's my boss from the place where I was stealing and went out in a blaze of glory. And, his name was Owen. And, you know, I just had remembered talking to my sponsor about the ninth step and thinking to myself, like, how am I going to know when it's the right time? You know, I hope God, like, ding, ha, it's time. And so that was it for me. That was my first amends. And, you know, he didn't even let me finish. It was just enough that I was willing. And it felt really good to kind of set some of that stuff right. And as I've gone on, I've had more experiences like that. It's just amazing to me how things work out and how God puts things in front of you when they're supposed to be. You know, and I've had the opportunity. I'm doing this workshop with my sponsor and a group of women. And right now we're in the middle of this fourth step. And I wish I could say it was more fun, you know, but it's not. And I've really, boy, I've had a really long week this week. And I wasn't even thinking about the fact that I was in the middle of this fourth step and I'm looking at all these defects of character, you know, and I'm a good alcoholic. I'm down the road. And so if I'm not around you guys enough, I start to think, well, I'm doing pretty good, you know. I start checking my inventory of stuff I have, like physical. I got my kid. My relationship's good. I'm getting promoted at work. Maybe I get to, I'm, you know, looking at buying a house for the first time. And, you know, but it all just, it came apart this week. And, you know, this program saves me. No matter what's going on in my life, you know, I was able to control myself and not react badly, so I still have my job, which is good. And, you know, I got to apply the steps in my life and my program. You know, okay, well, things are getting really tough. Well, it's time to make my world small again. You know, and what that means for me is I need to stop thinking about the rest of this week. I need to think about what I'm going to do in the next hour. You know, and I need to stop thinking about myself. I need to start thinking about how can I help somebody else. You know, maybe I need to make some more meetings. Maybe three meetings a week isn't enough, even though you've been sober X amount of time. You know, I can still lie to myself about what I need. And then the revelation as I'm sitting in the car and I'm driving up here and my sponsor casually mentions, well, maybe all these defects are coming out because we're in the middle of our fourth step. And I was like, ding, okay. You know, and that's why I need to be here and I need to be around people like me to remind me. Because the one thing that I'm really good at doing is I'm really, really excellent at lying to myself. You know, I spent the majority of my life telling myself that lies, you know, lies. Yes, you can have another one, Aaron. It's going to be okay this time. You know, yes, this guy, it will be okay. You're totally doing it for the right reasons. You need a place to live, you know. You know, or the Scarlett O'Hara kind of thing. Oh, I'll just worry about that tomorrow. And, you know, I created this world of lies for myself. And what AA does for me is it keeps me grounded. It tells me it's okay for me to be me. And thank God, once you recognize that you're an alcoholic, there's a solution, and here it is. And so if your life continues to be negative and you continue to, that's your choice. But if you want to choose something different, here it is, and we'll walk you through it because we know you can't do it by yourself. And so it's just been a really a wonderful journey for me. You know, I'm almost done rambling, but I would like to say that when I was drinking, it was always about the end of the destination, where I was going. You know, whether that was drinking, whether that was doing other things, the promotion, the relationship, the family, whatever, wherever I perceived at that time, you know, that I needed to be in order to be happy. If I just had this, you know, what AA has given me is now it's not about all of that. It's just about the journey, about learning about myself, being okay with myself, and trying to help somebody else be okay with themselves. So with that, I'm done.